The Metal AI Podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Felix Beecher, and this is the Medical AI Podcast, a 30-minute thrill ride of big ideas. We talk to a range of top guests, from industry innovators to scientists to philosophers. This is brought to you by Informatech, where I'm the head of healthcare technology.
The biggest beast in the jungle of medical AI is GE Healthcare. It has the largest market shares and the largest number of FDA-approved medical AI products. This includes algorithms for MRI image cleaning, detection of collapsed lungs, diagnosis of breast cancer. So where GE Healthcare is going with medical AI really counts, and people should listen carefully. To discuss this, I am absolutely delighted to have GE Healthcare's own big beast, their chief marketing officer, Simon Ross. Simon, it's a great pleasure to have you on. A big, big welcome.
Thanks, Felix. That's kind of an interesting intro.
Yes, so, I know.
you put the bar already high, but look, happy to be here. My name is Simon Philip Ross. By accent, you likely have noticed I'm German by origin. I'm with GE now for 12 years. In my current role, I lead marketing for our enterprise imaging and IR portfolio. That's the management of medical images and valuable information that comes from that. And happy to be here.
Great. Okay. Well, let's kick off with a description, if you would, of where you think medical AI is today in general.
I mean, that's a good one. Look, AI is for sure the technology that's coined to have the biggest transformative impact in healthcare in the years to come. And I believe that basically this is because of two reasons. One is because you have got a very scarce resource, which is a healthcare professional. And on the other hand, you have a resource that's abundant, which is data. Right. And if we could find insights and wisdom in this data to help to ease the job of the healthcare professional, that's what it's all about. Right. If you look where we stand today, I would say we are still in a nascent phase, right? This technology is powerful, but it didn't find the way yet into clinical mainstream practice. I mean, there are several, let's say, hurdles for that, but that's what I would say. It is in the nascent state. It is a very powerful tool that will basically change the way how we provide healthcare.
So could you give some example of how AI has advantages over current or conventional methodologies in medicine?
I mean, there are many examples. If you see, you can, at the end, apply artificial intelligence throughout the care continuum. Starts from scheduling, goes over augmenting the capabilities of healthcare professionals, and it ends in automating, let's say, tedious tasks, right? Typical use cases that we see right now is you can use artificial intelligence to augment, for example, the reading capabilities of a radiologist, or use it as a second opinion because algorithm can provide a more accurate interpretation of medical images today. Second use case is triage. I mean, a concept coming from the French Civil War, very prominent right now in the current COVID crisis, yeah. Where you say, one individual is severe ill, so treat him or her first. AI can be used in clinical decision support. It can be used to automate detection, right? You can basically automate diagnosis by automatically detecting abnormalities in medical images. I mentioned automation and workload assignment, right? Yeah. That's a powerful use case. And I mentioned also the scheduling paradigm. So AI can be used to detect late shows and so-called no-shows based on data. So these are all tangible examples where algorithms make a difference today and are impacting the way how we deliver health and care.
Okay, good. So look, we will dive into some use cases in a bit more detail. But Before we do that, why don't we talk about the big challenges that GE Healthcare is facing or the field is facing with development and deployment of medical AI systems?
I mean, that's a good one, right? I said this before. It's when you talk about AI, let's say, in research settings and to bring them then into clinical mainstream, that's a rocky road, I would guess. And it's not just because of the technology. It's also because of a lot of factors. You mentioned before that that we have roughly in GE we have many AI algorithms which are FDA approved. We count over 500 AI algorithms today, which are approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and roughly a little bit less than 400 of these fall into radiology, which is one of our main space. Mm-hmm. When we take this as an example and to see how adoption of these algorithms are happening and what's hindering, I would say our industry is behind other industries, right? If you see adoption of AI, Accenture published something called the AI Maturity Report, and you see that that other sectors basically are way ahead, like the tech sector, telecommunications, and healthcare ranks in the bottom, way below average in adoption. I believe there are various factors for that. For this, one is the missing interoperability. So systems are not talking to each other. Data is somewhere in siloed system within the healthcare system. To free up this data, which is needed to develop and deploy AI, that's still one of our major challenges, likely the biggest one that we have. The second one is data availability and the quality of data. So AI models require a large amount of high quality data to be trained effectively. And in radiology, this means we need this data in a place where we can work with it. And that's not the case. 95% of the 50 petabytes that an average hospital produces in data points each year go somewhere into a silo and is not used, right? So the availability and the access to quality data is a second big hurdle. A third one, I truly believe, is the missing integration of these applications into the clinical workflow, so into the day-to-day of the healthcare professional, right? And their user experience is a very important point. Today, they have to learn different kind of applications. They have to switch between systems. This adds sometimes to their workload. They have to look into different viewers. And that's if we don't integrate this AI algorithms in a way that the healthcare professionals are not feeling it, so the best AI is the invisible one, we will still don't get to an adoption state. And then there are the typical things we have, a remaining trust gap on the professional, but also on the patient side. I read recently an article from a think tank, or they call themselves a fact tank, called Pew Research. And they ask 11,000 Americans if they would basically like to be AI, to be part of their diagnosis and treatment, and 60% said that they would feel uncomfortable with this. So there is still a lot of, let's say, reluctance towards this technology. And other hurdles are regulations. I mean, we have to regulate artificial intelligence. It's not something which we can avoid. It's important because we treat with likely the most important good, which is your health. But it's still also hindering us in ways. And then the last one is the missing, let's say, model of value exchange. So do I get paid for using AI? Yes, no. If we don't solve these issues, I believe we will not accelerate the adoption. So in a nutshell, it's interoperability, it's data availability and quality, it's the seamless integration into workflows, it's addressing the trust gap, regulations and reimbursement. These are the main, let's say, hurdles that we have to address.
Okay, that's a fantastic summary. And I suppose in a way, what that comes to, or what that adds up to, is a situation in healthcare where we're dealing with a phenomenally complex set of institutions, data, processes, all coming together, and it's a very difficult thing to change.
2 points, yeah. I mean, I always say there are a few sectors which are as challenging and complex, but at the same time as fascinating as healthcare.
Yes.
But it's a 2 point. I mean, it's we are in a at a in very interesting times in our sector.
Absolutely. Okay, let's look at some specific use cases, just to give people a flavor of the kind of areas in which GE Healthcare is involved with medical AI. So could you just give us a brief overview of use case number one?
I mean, look, for me, it's always, if you think about innovative technologies in healthcare, such as AI is, it always helps to ask yourself three questions. The first one is, where in the healthcare system is the algorithm applied? Is it at the point of care? Is it on the departmental level? Is it across the entire healthcare system? So where is my algorithm actually doing the work? The second one, second question I ask, which is very important, is what is it doing for the healthcare professional? So how is the algorithm supporting the healthcare professional? And the third question would be, what's the outcome, right? That's how I look always if I think about technology. In GE, we provide algorithms across the care continuum, but as a medtech and digital health company, we develop algorithms that should make our machines smarter, right? That's one of the main use cases of our main intentions, to develop algorithms close to our devices, like imaging devices, to make them smarter and help healthcare professionals to use them more efficiently. A good example here is our AIR Recon DL technology. It's a prime example when it comes to what we call pixel AI. It's a deep learning trained algorithm to reconstruct at the end sharper images. It's not only taking the normal data set, it's taking the raw data set.
Yeah.
And it's eliminating the noise in this in these scans. So technically, it delivers a higher signal to noise ratio. And you can apply this in various anatomies, right? In short, it's an algorithm that gives you better images in less time. Right, that's in the magnet resonance imaging space. We have customers who apply this across a board of exams, and they see that they can reduce scan times between 30% and 50%. Right, this gives them sometimes even one more exam an hour, which is a very prime use case. And doing that, they have the same or even better quality of images, right? So it's two things here. I get a higher throughput on the one hand, and on the other hand, the radiologist has a higher clinical confidence because the scans are better in quality. And that's one very tangible example of how we are applying a deep learning algorithm in our close to our MRI machines today.
Okay, let's talk about use case two, which is quite different from that, isn't it? So could you explain something about that?
And the second one that I want to highlight here is what we call so-called no-show and late-show detection, right?
Yeah.
So you can use algorithms on a departmental level, again, for example, in radiology, detecting how likely, for example, Simon Rost is to show up to an exam at 8 o'clock in the morning, right? And why is this important? Because if you just take the UK as a market today, as a healthcare market, there's a backlog of patients who need treatment or diagnosis of 7 million people, right? So if one individual would not show up, this basically would be a lost space, would be waste, right?
Yeah.
If you even go back to pre-pandemic times, I think it was around 2019, I got an article that basically said that the NHS is losing £1 billion each year because more than 8 million appointments were missed, right? And if you put this into basically operations with this 1 billion, you could have done 257,000 hip replacements, or less than a million, a little bit less, cataract operations. So that's the economic, let's say, miss you have there. This algorithm basically uses various variables regarding the patient history, regarding, it could involve even weather, traffic data, and these kind of things to detect what's the likelihood of an individual to show up or to show up late to an exam. So the organization can take countermeasures. They can send reminders. They cannot even show these kind of slots where people will not show up, to basically guarantee that the slots are filled, right? And we see that an average organization has a no-show rate between 6% and 7%, more or less. And if you apply this kind of technology, we see that customers of ours were able to bring this no-show rate down by 70% from time to time. For example, for one customer of ours was able to bring it down from 4.6% to 1.2%. That's a real tangible outcome where you basically eliminate waste in the system.
I see. It's fascinating. One of the reasons that that is fascinating to me is that it's got nothing fundamentally to do with healthcare, right? It could be applied in all sorts of contexts to make booking appointments more efficient, I would have thought.
No. I mean, this technology for sure is used in different sectors, right? It's used in the airline industry quite prominently, in hospitality, when you book your table. The difference, though, which is very important to mention, Felix, is that healthcare is a very specific and a very special sector. And sometimes we can learn from other sectors. Sometimes we have specificities that apply for to us, right? For example, you cannot, like in an airline, double book an OR, right? Because this would limit the access to healthcare. So yes, this technology is used in other sectors as well, but we have to also factor in the specificities of our sector here, right? So, you're right. This is a technology that also could apply in other sectors. We even learned from time to time. We have an acceleration program where we work together with the industry, so with the big techs, with startups, with healthcare partners, to accelerate innovation. And there we had use cases where we had these technologies coming from other sectors approaching us to see how they can make a difference in healthcare.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's come to the third use case, which again is very different. And I love these differences because it's a testament to the flexibility with which AI technologies can be applied, right? So could you talk a bit about that?
Sure. I mean, the first one I explained was mainly at the point of care, right? Where you apply an algorithm during diagnosis. The second one was more on a departmental level, where you look into the radiology and the scheduling. The third one applies across the entire healthcare system, right? We have something called command centers, which apply prescriptive analytics and algorithms to basically provide what we call real-time healthcare. So it is telling you the real-time status of patients and critical resources within the hospital system, and also predicts when, for example, certain kind of resources are not available. Is a bed available at, I don't know, an ICU bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, and so forth. So it's basically showing how a patient is going through the healthcare system and predicting bottlenecks so that care teams can get ahead of it. And that's basically on an entire system level. So if you look into these three use cases, the beauty is that you can apply them throughout healthcare organizations, at the point of care, at a departmental level, and also at an entire system level. And that's what the beauty of this technology is.
The phrase command centers is very interesting as well, because it suggests that somebody's like in some kind of mission control where they can see, they have displays and they can see somebody's cardiology results, somebody's ultrasound results, and all sorts of other information. And then somehow that's being integrated using machine learning systems. Is that right? I mean, let's probe that a little bit more.
I mean, if you think about that, this is basically what we have is what we call tiles. These tiles are applications. We have more than 34 tiles today that are mirroring in real time the status of your healthcare organization. Yeah. Right? And they apply in different kind of departments. Could be the radiology tile, could be in the ICU, could be in the OR. And we use predictive analytics to say, for example, when certain kind of things, or we predict when certain kind of things will happen. For example, in COVID, we were able to look into facts like, if you admit more COVID patients, when is your ICU basically full, and what kind of counter activities do you have to take, right? And these are the kind of things that you can do. So it's a real time, think about this like a real time application that gives you insights in your organization. Some of them are AI enabled, some of them are not, right? But where you can see, let's say, the patient flow throughout your hospital.
Okay.
It helps you to predict bottlenecks. And you can directly basically take action. In some cases, so this can be in a virtual space, but it can also be in a physical space. What we have in some installations of ours is we have literally a room where these tiles are at a big wall, the wall of analytics, where you can see in real time what's happening in your hospital. And you have the decision makers, not somewhere sitting in a silo, but all in front of it. So it also... is changing your entire, let's say, workflow and your working process, because you can also take real-time decisions.
Fascinating. Okay, well, let's talk about large language models, which, of course, everyone wants to talk about. Now, these are being applied in healthcare, and, of course, it's very early days. We're still essentially brainstorming the application of these in healthcare. Mm-hmm. Now, also, it's very topical, because yesterday, Elon Musk... plus a bunch of other AI luminaries published an open letter, essentially calling for the curtailing of AI development. And let me just read you a couple of sentences from this, because it's very interesting. Should we automate away all the jobs, including the fulfilling ones? Should we develop non-human minds that might eventually outnumber, outsmart, obsolete, and replace us? Should we risk loss of control of our civilization? Therefore, we call on all AI labs to immediately pause for at least 6 months the training of AI systems more powerful than GPT-4. Now, that's the context of this is large language models. But of course, mm-hmm. if we are going to apply large language models in healthcare, then of course we should be listening. What's your immediate reaction to that?
I mean, look, for me, even if you go before that, it's quite interesting how fast... like these large language models like ChatGPT were progressing. It's the first time, for example, that there was an algorithm on the front cover of Time magazine. So this shows you that this technology is close to being mainstream, right? Because I'm not aware that any algorithm made it to the Time magazine, to the front cover, to be honest.
True.
But for me, it's like always with technology. It is not AI versus human intelligence. It's more AI, so artificial intelligence plus human intelligence. We have, in the long run, we have to learn to live and to use this kind of technologies. That's maybe the first call to action. But also for myself, what I do is I try to get used to it, and I try to get my hands basically dirty with these kind of applications, mm-hmm. trying them myself. So in healthcare, you cannot try this everywhere, but I think there's a big potential for these kind of technologies like large language models. I mean, the first one is it's very good in basically summarizing medical information, right? You can summarize a medical record of a patient with this in a matter of seconds, right? And you get family history, symptoms, lab results, all together in one point of view, right? So this is a very powerful use case that I could think of, right? The second one is think about research papers. I mean, I read this statistic, which is already, I guess, a year old or so, that medical knowledge is doubling every 72 days, right? So if you are basically studying medicine after your first semester, it's already obsolete what you learned. Accelerating here, right? But think how powerful this technology could be in summarizing research paper with a list of keywords and an abstract and giving you the essence of what's written there. So it can you can have access to data points very quick. Again, I go back to the example of the 50 petabytes that a hospital produces each year. I did the exercise to capture this in books, right? Yeah. So how many books would you need to capture the average amount of information that a hospital produces? Have a guess, Felix. How many?
I wouldn't even know where to start with that question, Simon. Tell me.
So it's 8 billion books, more or less.
Friday.
Right. So that's the amount of data that an average hospital produces. And now, if you have to search for this one sentence that helps you to cure your patient in this 8 billion books as a healthcare professional, impossible. But there, for example, technology like ChatGPT can be of great let's say value. On top of that, there are use cases like making your life easier, writing some kind of like standardized reports and so on. Answer broad questions is a good use case. And then this entire chatbot functionality, where you can do certain kind of prerequisites before you even go to the hospital, that's where, and let's say the FAQs of a doctor's office, that's where large language models can make a difference and free up time at the end for healthcare professionals. So I think it's a powerful technology. I think you look, there's no doubt that basically AI will be part of care pathways and of the work of healthcare professionals going forward. So you need to start to understand the capabilities, but also the limitations, right? And for me, the best way to do so is to early on work with it, right? Maybe not in your most difficult cases, but you have to start to work with these technologies to understand it, because I'm pretty sure that it's like with all technology. A healthcare professional who's using technology will outperform a healthcare professional who's not, likely, right? So that's what's also with this technology. Big potential. I'm not underestimating the risk here, but for me, at the end, I believe it's a tool that you have to use to augment your capabilities. And that's the same applies for ChatGPT.
Okay. Simon, let's talk about the competitive landscape. How is that changing for you? For example, are you finding that your competitors in this space are no longer other healthcare companies? They perhaps are big tech companies.
I mean, that's an interesting, very interesting question. And I always like to use the concept of market companions. Why do I say that? Because I think our sector is so complex that not just one company can basically address all of the issues our sector has, right? If you take today's healthcare systems around the world, they are on an mainly unsustainable trajectory due to increasing population, growing chronic diseases, a global deficit in skilled healthcare professionals, limited access, varying levels of quality. So there are many factors, wasteful processes, for example, that make the life of our customers at the end very challenging at this point in time. And the need for digital technology and AI has never felt more strongly than today. I truly believe that, right? So it's no surprise that big tech companies like the Alphabets of the world, the Amazons, the Microsofts, the Apple, the Facebooks, and the likes are accelerating, let's say, the entrance into the healthcare market. I believe each of them focusing on their strengths and aligned to their company strategies. There's also another big, part that we see a lot of startups and scale-ups coming into the sector. So you're right. There is a lot of, movement right in there. But there's some things that I personally believe. The first one is that this traditional monolithic approach in healthcare IT and in enterprise imaging that we had in the past will be challenged by the market. And there are, for me, two critical levers, I believe, that that is driving digital transformation in healthcare. One is collaboration and an ecosystem approach. And we see this more and more. And the second one is the platforming or platforms, right? These are two levers that at the end are changing the way how we provide healthcare going forward. What does it mean for us as, traditional players in the healthcare space? We have to be more open for innovation, right? We have to collaborate more as an ecosystem where we work together with various stakeholders, with healthcare providers, with medtech companies that could be market companions, with technology providers, with big techs, with startups, with acceleration partners, with patient associations. So this ecosystem approach will be the one that in the future counts, right? And this collaboration at eye level is essential there. From my point of view, this new entrance, let them be big techs, startups, and others, should be more seen as potential partners instead of being a major threat, right? I really mean that we as traditional players, we have to figure out how we can join forces and how we can create these partnerships. And we have to see how basically these offerings, especially in the healthcare IT and in the digital health space, can augment our own value propositions and provide value to our customers. I mean, there's one thing that the COVID pandemic has shown is that you can achieve more together and rapid innovation if you work as an ecosystem. And we should keep this mindset going forward. So yes, is the answer. I see new entrants as well. But my message would be to not directly see them as a threat, but see them as a potential partner to augment the things that we are. Because as I said, there's too much in stake in our sector, and it's a very, very complex space where not one company is able to solve all of the problems.
Well, I suppose in a way we have already touched on a really great example of this, namely embedding large language models into all sorts of medical technologies, right? Large language models were developed by not a healthcare hardware company, but by a software company that's actually got nothing to do with healthcare.
Good point, yeah.
Let me ask you a very difficult question now, and that is, how do you see the field developing the next 20 or 30 years?
I mean, this is, if I would have the crystal ball.
Yes.
That's a real good one. I likely would not sit here anymore. And look, for me, to go literally 20 to 30 years, I think is very ambitious. And let me tell you what excites me, where I believe there will be an impact in the next 5 to 10 years. AI-enabled technologies that I believe first excite me and that I believe will have a lot of, let's say, immediate impact in the years to come. One is, we talked about advanced imaging analysis. I think this will continue, right? Because as we generate more data points, we can also train our models to be better, right? So so the degree of accuracy and speed will even accelerate here, and we can have faster and more accurate diagnosis. So detecting diseases earlier when they're still treatable or even going into the prevention stage, this is a result of that. The second one I think is around everything which is personalized medicine. Yeah. If you think about how many data points you are generating every day with your smartphones, with your wearables, with your trackers that some people use, with patient reported outcomes, this is very powerful information. And if you can stitch it all together, if you even think about further things like genetics and lifestyle data, there's so much power in there to basically go from sick care to true healthcare, because you are able to predict earlier and prevent diseases. I also believe that virtual assistants, and we talked about this, and chatbots have a real future, because some of those, when you interact with them, you don't even feel that this is a machine you interact with, but they take waste out of the system and they free up time from human beings to focus on where they are best, diagnosing and treating disease, right? So that's a big one. I think the entire field of predictive analytics, where you can predict patient outcomes based on historical data, has a lot of, let's say, growth potential. Robotics and surgery specifically is also a growing field where AI is used to guide surgical robots with a very high precision and accuracy in surgical procedure, reducing the risk of human error at the end. We talked about natural language processing and large language models, where you can tap into this unstructured data and mine for information there. And as one very field that also excites me is everything that is remote patient monitoring and shifting basically care out of the hospital, right? With wearable devices, mobile health applications, AI can analyze patient data, again, in real time, and alert healthcare providers if there are any abnormalities, and the patient doesn't have to be in a hospital, right? So you're shifting also a care out outside of a hospital, but what's needed. Plus, you involve the patient in the care pathway, right? And in their treatments. For me, I truly believe that there will come a time where patients will ask that digital technologies and AI is part of their treatments. And look, crystal ball question. Again, if I believe healthcare in the future will be more patient-centric due to AI. It will be partly virtual. It will be data-driven, so more accurate. It will be precision-oriented, and it will be outcome-based. This is, if you summarize it, what I believe this technology will lead to in the future.
Okay, so you are a true optimist, Simon, and I assume, therefore, that you're not a signatory to Elon Musk's open letter to humanity, right?
I mean, I would not discharge the risks and also the ethics that we have to take into account to have a fair technology. But it is like with every technology. I mean, in the past, I don't know when this was, but I saw an interesting article, or it was a visualization where I think it's in LinkedIn or somewhere where I saw that, where basically the past teachers wanted to forbid calculators because they were some kind of let's say threats to our intelligence. Right?
You're right.
And maybe we are in a similar situation here. Yes, you have regulate. You have to take all of the ethical risks into account. But again, I think that the potential of this technology outweighs the negative risks in the long run, right? But
yes.
I don't want to downplay the risks here. So that's something where regulation has to happen, where standardization has to happen, where we have to find also codes of conduct, right, to use with this technology. But we have to find a way, I think, to live with it and embed it into our day-to-day.
Yeah, no. That's
so yes, I would put myself on the optimist side. You're right. Without being naive here, right? So we have to address the kind of ethical and also let's say ethical thoughts here as well. But I see that the positive impact at the end can solve many of the problems that our sector has.
I think that's very nicely put. Okay, look, Simon. Last question, and it's a question I ask everybody. And that is, ignoring everything to do with GE Healthcare, what is your favorite, your personal favorite example of medical AI?
Oh man, there's so many, but it's a good question.
What I
think is where you put it like this, where I think we have to do more as a sector is to involve and empower the patient. So any kind of AI that solves this last mile to the patient is the one that I would prefer. There are companies like Ada in Ada Health, for example, who are doing exactly that. They are putting the power of diagnosis and of treatments close to the patient. And any kind of AI that helps to enable this last mile of treatment and empower patients, that's the one where I personally, let's say, I'm excited about.
So the name of the company is, sorry, what again?
Ada. Ada Health.
Okay, mm-hmm. Ada Health, right. Good. Okay, well, look, Simon, we have covered a huge amount of ground, and I think you've done a magnificent job of introducing some really, really interesting ideas. So I'm very, very grateful to you. Thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully we will speak again another time.
Thanks for having me, Felix.
Cheers, Simon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. I'm Felix Beecher. Ping me on LinkedIn for more information on Omdia's services in healthcare technology. See you next time.